Good morning. Okay. Again, I'm Lizzie Tirone, and as Hillard said, I'm going to be talking about chlamydia surveillance and discussing our need for new approaches. For my presentation this morning, I thought I would review our current chlamydia surveillance portfolio, including data from case reports, the Infertility Prevention Project, or IPP, the National Job Training Program, and the National Health and Nutrition Examination Surveyor in Haines, and then discuss how we might better monitor chlamydia morbidity. So this presentation, similar to John's, is going to be a little data heavy, but I have to confess I get really excited about data. I love talking about it. And I, in particular, get really excited about chlamydia data. I find it really interesting, but it's actually also incredibly challenging. So with that in mind, I'd like to start off with a social marketing ad from Australia that reads, "Chlamydia, hard to spell, easy to catch." In thinking about chlamydia data, I might change this to chlamydia data, hard to interpret, easy to get confused. Because interpreting chlamydia data can be tough, especially when you're looking at trends. So starting with trends in our case report data, chlamydia is a nationally notifiable disease, and since 2000, all 50 states and DC have regulations that require reporting of chlamydia cases. You can see in the figure here that rates have increased steadily in the last 15 years among both men and women. The data presented for 2011 are preliminary, but as of March 2nd, there have been almost 1.4 million cases of chlamydia reported to CDC, which is the most number of cases of any disease ever reported to CDC. When we look at reported case rates by race ethnicity, you can see differences between racial and ethnic groups, with blacks, the dotted blue line, having the highest reported case rates, and whites and Asian Pacific Islanders having the lowest reported rates. And you can see racial disparities have increased over time. When we look at reported case rates by age and sex, you can see the rates are highest among young females. Those are the top bars on the top right. And you can see the reported case rate among females aged 20 to 24 years old are higher than the case rates among adolescent females. Not by much, but still a little higher. And we'll come back to this finding when we talk about our screening coverage estimates. We can also look at reported case rates by source of report, so the type of facility where the infection was diagnosed. And for females, the groups of bars on the right, you can see the majority of reported infections were diagnosed in private physician or HMO settings, that's the large blue bar, followed by family planning and STD clinics. And this is different than what we see in males, which is the group of bars on the left, where a significant proportion of males are still diagnosed in STD clinics, so that's the second light blue bar. However, still keeping in mind these 2011 data are preliminary, but for the first time, more male chlamydial infections were diagnosed in the private setting than in STD clinics in 2011. Okay, so what does chlamydia case report data tell us? Well, first it shows that chlamydia is the most commonly reported nationally notifiable disease. We have a lot of cases of chlamydia reported. It shows that chlamydia is most commonly diagnosed among young females, and that many females and an increasing number of males are diagnosed in private healthcare settings, and that there are significant health inequalities, particularly by race and ethnicity. But what do chlamydia case report data not tell us? Well, it really can't tell us the incidence or prevalence of chlamydia, which are kind of the standard measures of morbidity we like to use in surveillance. In our case reports, the duration of infection is unknown, so we don't know if these are new or old infections that are just getting picked up and reported. And more importantly, when trying to look at trends in our case report data, it's really tough because our data can't account for any changes in things that influence case rates. For example, changes in screening coverage. Chlamydia is a mostly asymptomatic disease, so if we look for it, we find it. And if we look for it more, we tend to find it more. And we think screening coverage has been increasing over the last 10 years. So if we look at the HEDIS measure for chlamydia screening coverage, you can see that since 2001, screening coverage among females aged 16 to 24 years has increased in both Medicaid and HMO settings. Currently, about 60% of females targeted for screening are screened. I do want to draw your attention, though, to the different styles of lines. So the solid lines are screening rates among females aged 21 to 24 years old, and the dotted lines are females aged 16 to 20, so the younger women. And you can see in both provider settings, the older women have higher screening rates. Now, if you remember, in our reported case rates were highest among females aged 20 to 24 years old. So it's possible we're finding more infections in women in that age range because we're looking for it better. And we're also using better tests when we look for the infections. Our case report data don't account for any changes in test technology, meaning the type of diagnostic test used, and we've noted there's been some changes in the last decade. We don't collect type of test used in our case report data, but we can look to data from the Infertility Prevention Project, or IPP. Among females tested in clinics participating in IPP, you can see the percent of tests that were nucleic acid amplification tests, or NATs, increased dramatically over the last 11 years, from less than 15% to almost 100%. NATs are more sensitive tests, so this would likely influence the number of cases identified. So again, not only are we looking for chlamydia more, we're screening more women, but we're also doing a better job diagnosing it when we screen them. In addition to screening coverage and test technology, changes in empiric treatment and reporting practices also influence trends in our case rates. We know many patients, particularly men, are empirically treated and may not be diagnosed and reported as a case. We don't have national data on this, but it's possible that empiric treatment is increased over time as more states implement expedited partner therapy as a tool for partner management. We also think many more jurisdictions are relying on electronic lab reporting, which is likely more complete than provider reports. So it's possible we're getting more cases reported to us independent of any changes in incidence. We do acknowledge all of these limitations in our surveillance report. We state the continued increase in case reports likely represents a continued increase in screening, expanded use of more sensitive tests, and more complete national reporting, but it may also reflect a true increase in morbidity, because to be honest, it's really tough to interpret these trends in case report data. And so we supplement these case reports with additional data sources, which include negative tests, can account for changes in test technology, use consistent screening criteria and reporting practices, and are representative of the general population. So the first supplemental data source I'm going to highlight addresses the first two of these issues, negative tests and test technology. The Infertility Prevention Project, or IPP, supports chlamydia and gonorrhea screening and treatment services for low-income, sexually active women. IPP funds are primarily targeted to family planning and STD clinics, and the program is implemented by CDC in collaboration with the Office of Population Affairs. IPP began in 1988 as a demonstration project in the Pacific Northwest, and it was expanded to all 10 DHHS regions by 1994. Clinics participating in IPP submit test-based data to CDC. So it's not just reported infections, we also get the denominator of the tests that were conducted. So this allows for the calculation of positivity, the number of persons testing positive divided by the number of persons tested. In addition to test result data, core variables are collected by all sites, and they include patient demographics, so things like age, gender, race, and ethnicity, specimen source, meaning if it was a urine or a cervical sample, and test technology, if it was a NAT, and if so, what type. We also get facility type, so if the clinic was a family planning clinic or a prenatal care clinic or another type. Some project areas and regions collect enhanced variables that are not routinely sent to CDC, such as if the patient had any clinical signs or symptoms and patient-reported risk behavior. Some areas also have unique identifiers so that they can look at things like repeat screening and reinfection and mobility between clinics. However, these enhanced variables are not systematically collected across regions, and so we only really have a limited number of core variables available to us at the national level. So we may not have a lot of variables, but we do have a lot of data. In 2010, data on over 3.5 million chlamydia tests were provided to CDC through IPP, up from about 2.5 million in 2000. You can see that the number of gonorrhea tests provided to CDC has also increased over the last 11 years, likely due to increased use of dual tests. So we can look to see how many of these tests were positive. And for chlamydia, when we look at the median state-specific positivity rates, you can see positivity has increased over time. In 2010, 8% of tests conducted among women aged 15 to 24 years tested in family planning clinics participating in IPP were positive. We can also look at positivity trends by region. So I know the bar graphs on this figure are small, but what this does is it reports trends in positivity by the 10 regions for the last 5 years. In most regions, positivity is increasing or stable, but there is one outlier, and that's Region 9. Region 9 saw a dramatic decrease in positivity, so they went from 8.3% in 2009 to 5.5% in 2010. Now, the likely reason for this decrease highlights one of the limitations of using IPP data for surveillance, and that's that the clinics providing data through IPP change over time. So this is a figure of the number of tests each region submitted to CDC through IPP. The light blue bars are the 2009 counts, and the darker blue are 2010. And here you can see a big jump in Region 9. So in 2010, the California and Los Angeles project areas began to report data from almost every federally funded family planning clinic site in the state, rather than just a smaller number of Sentinel sites provided to us in prior years. So really, we started getting data from a bunch of new clinics, which likely had a lower baseline prevalence. So that decrease in positivity probably isn't a true decrease in prevalence, just a reflection of new data sources. All right, so what does the national IPP data tell us? Well, there's a lot of testing going on, 3.5 million chlamydia tests in 2010, and that's just clinics participating in IPP. And it looks like crude positivity is increasing in family planning clinics. And again, I say crude because it's not adjusted for any changes in test technology. And we do know that test technology has been changing with NAT use increasing. So what does the national IPP data not tell us? Well, we still don't really know the incidence and prevalence of chlamydia. Although positivity may be a proxy for prevalence, it's really tough when you start looking at trends. The national IPP data reported in the surveillance report do not account for any changes in test technology. Again, that crude positivity line doesn't account for that increase in the use of more sensitive tests. It doesn't account for any changes in screening coverage or criteria. Because IPP is a program, not a surveillance system, clinics may be targeting their screening to improve the efficiency of their program. As demonstrated by Region 9, the national data doesn't account for any changes in clinics included or the amount of data reported. And then finally, it doesn't account for any changes in clinic mix. And what I mean by that is any changes in who's going to these IPP clinics. So for example, we know prevalence is highest among adolescents. So if a clinic hires a provider who's really great with teens, the clinic may see more adolescents and their positivity may increase, again, independent of any changes in the population prevalence. So we really need additional data sources which collect data from sites with consistent screening and reporting practices. And for that type of data at the national level, we look to the National Job Training Program. The National Job Training Program is a residential education and job training program for socioeconomically disadvantaged young adults aged 16 to 24 years. And there are approximately 110 training centers nationwide. All men and women entering the National Job Training Program are screened for chlamydia during their entrance physical examination. The screening program has been in place since 2003. Currently, about 15,000 women and 30,000 men are screened annually. Again, they have about over 95% coverage. All tests are done in a private lab, and these data are shared with CDC through collaboration with the Department of Labor. So what's really great about this data source is these estimates truly are prevalent since almost the whole population is screened. So when researchers looked at trends in prevalence data collected in the training program from 2003 to 2007, they found that among both men and women aged 16 to 24 years, chlamydia prevalence declined significantly. It climbed 19% among women and 8% among males. And because test technology is included in this data set, they were able to account for any changes in NAT use. So these findings tell us something about what's happening with chlamydia among entrants to the job training program, specifically that chlamydia prevalence is decreasing. But what did these estimates not tell us? Well, they still don't really tell us the incidence and prevalence of chlamydia in the general population. We still don't know incidence because duration of infection is unknown. And second, these estimates are likely not generalizable to the larger population, meaning the population that enters the National Job Training Program may be a specific population with a specific risk. And finally, when looking at trends, it's possible that the population entering the program may change over time, particularly in a changing economic climate. So in addition to having a data source which includes negative tests, can account for changes in test technology, has consistent screening criteria and reporting practices, we'd also like it to be representative of the general population. And for that type of data, we look to the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, or NHANES. NHANES is a nationally representative probability sample of the U.S. civilian population. NHANES has been a continuous survey since 1999, with data released in two-year cycles. In addition to an extensive survey, a sample of participants undergo physical examinations in mobile examination centers like the one pictured here. As part of that examination, participants aged 14 to 39 years provide urine samples, which are tested for chlamydia using a gnat. Currently, about 3,000 participants aged 14 to 39 years are sampled per survey cycle. So here is the most currently available data from NHANES. This figure shows chlamydia prevalence among men and women aged 14 to 39 years, and it has prevalence estimates for 6 survey cycles. I'd like to note that the last estimate using data from the 2009-10 survey is unpublished data and should still be considered preliminary at this time. When we look at trends in the population overall, prevalence declined from a high of about 2.6% in the 1999-2000 survey, and for the last 3 survey cycles has stayed around 1.6%. When we look at prevalence estimates among women aged 14 to 25 years, the population targeted for screening, a couple of things stand out. But again, let me note that similar to the last slide, the data from 2009-10 is unpublished and should be considered preliminary. So the things that stand out. So first, the prevalence is higher in this population. I've changed the y-axis here, but rather than the 1.5 to 2.5% in the previous slides, these estimates hover around a prevalence of 3%, going up to 4% in some cycles. You'll also note that the confidence intervals got larger, and that's because the sample size got smaller when we restricted to just young females. And that small sample size makes it difficult to look at trends, meaning it's hard to see if prevalence is changing or if it's just noise over time. Still, it looks like prevalence has remained somewhat stable in this population. Again, these data are prevalence estimates from a nationally representative survey, so they are closest that we have to 2 trends in chlamydia morbidity in the general population. And I think what we can learn from the estimates presented here is that prevalence among 14 to 25-year-old females is about 3%, and it looks like prevalence in this population has been stable over the last 12 years. However, there are numerous limitations to using NHANES for chlamydia surveillance. So first, NHANES was not designed to reliably estimate prevalence of disease of less than 10%. If you remember, NHANES is primarily a nutrition-based survey, and so many of the chronic diseases that it measures have much higher prevalence than our 3% or 1.5% for our chlamydia estimates. So as a result, low prevalence combined with small sample sizes mean we have unstable estimates. So again, that's a big confidence intervals. And because of that, we're not able to look at things like age, by gender, by race, ethnicity specific estimates. And when we do that, our estimates get even more unstable. Also, these data are only available at the national level. So NHANES can't provide, for example, the prevalence of chlamydia in Mississippi or even the prevalence of chlamydia in the South. Data are also not timely. Data are collected in 2-year cycles with at least a 1-year lag time for data release. And finally, geographic clustering may influence prevalence estimates. Our national case report data and data from the National Job Training Program suggest that some parts of the country have higher prevalence than others. NHANES samples about 15 locations a year, and so if by chance in one cycle the survey oversamples locations with high prevalence, it can inflate national estimates. And if by chance low prevalence areas are sampled, it can diminish our national estimates. So while NHANES is one of the best sources of data for prevalence in the general population, there are significant limitations to its use for surveillance. Okay, so I know I've gone over a lot of data sources this morning. As you can see, our national chlamydia surveillance is complicated, and interpreting the data is challenging. We use multiple data sources to supplement traditional case report surveillance. However, there are inherent biases in each data source, and trends from these supplemental data sources may not reliably estimate burden of disease except in specific populations. And when we look at our trend data, we can see different stories. So case report and crude positivity in IPP are increasing. However, prevalence estimates suggest stable or decreasing morbidity. So I think we have an opportunity to reconsider how we monitor chlamydia. So how do we do that? Well, I would propose that we need consistent data sources, which include negative tests, can account for changes in test technology, have consistent and measurable screening criteria and reporting practices. And I added measurable to my previous bullet because I think we need to, in the future, be able to account for any changes over time. The data should be representative of the general population, and then I would add to it that it would be timely, because we do want to be able to use these surveillance data to assist programs in planning, implementing, and evaluating control programs. And ideally, it should be able to be stratified so that we can measure trends in population of interest, such as by patient demographics or by geographic areas. So some options for improving surveillance may include reconsidering what metrics we use. So we've really focused in the past on positivity and prevalence. Perhaps there are other metrics we could use. We could consider increasing the sample size of our national probability surveys so that we have increased stability of our estimates. However, surveys like NHANES are complex projects and are not easy or cheap to modify. We could also consider sentinel surveillance, so we could perhaps just choose a few sentinel sites throughout the country and collect more detailed data there so that we're able to account for any changes in the clinic population. So with that, I hope we have some time for discussion. I'm happy to take any questions about the data presented, or I'd really like to hear your thoughts on how we can better monitor chlamydia. Thank you.
Any questions?
Hey, Michael.
Another great presentation. Thank you very much. It's so great that Hillard's let you guys use 2011 data.
He actually encouraged us to use it. It wasn't just a let. It was a push, actually.
Well, because of our shift to a web-based system, there's going to be at least another couple thousand cases coming in from California, but it won't change anything to each other. But your issue, your point about racial disparities increasing, that we can see from the slide that you showed, I couldn't see that necessarily. Were you referring to the absolute difference, which...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that would be a meaningful assessment of the disparity increasing necessarily. I mean, although one way one could look at it, I suppose, that's what you were referring to, the absolute increase?
Yeah, I mean, I know you can look at both relative and absolute ways to kind of look at disparities. I mean, I think our case rates among African Americans have continued to increase. Our case rates among whites are decreasing. And we see that in our NHANES data.
They were decreasing.
Slightly. It's hard to tell.
Well, then it would be an increasing relative disparity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And also, your point about that some of the incidents may be not incidents picking up old infections.
Right.
I should know more about the natural history of chlamydia, but I never heard that good point before. I mean, how untreated cases just could be old enough that the actual infection occurred a long time ago, or not so long ago?
Yeah, so we don't have great data on the natural history of chlamydia. So the most recent review that I know of that was published in the Chlamydia Immunology Supplement in JID last year, Will Geisler, you know, what he found was that about 50% of chlamydia infections resolve within a year. But that means some hang around longer than a year. So that's kind of the best that we know.
Okay. So the problem, most of them are probably within that year.
Probably.
Right.
And I would just also add that our case report data we know that some women get chlamydia infections multiple times a year. So that numerator in the case report reflects multiple women often.
Great. And I guess we'll talk later about how to document that significant impact in the California data for that and all those sites. How do you want to handle that in terms of eventual surveillance report or something? Because it was a big change. I didn't think it changed from that much, but it was a huge addition to the sites.
It is. And it's, you know, you went from, I think, sending us 44,000 tests to 129,000. So I mean, it really is a big difference. And actually, we have added specific language in the chlamydia supplement this year to try to explain that.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Hi.
Thank you so much. It was a wonderful review.
Thanks.
I'm going to add one more layer of complexity, actually, that I haven't heard discussed yet in some of these reviews that we've thought about. And I was going to ask you and maybe people in the audience whether or not you're going to cast your thoughts in this direction, which is basically that as I was thinking around how to teach clinicians about how to interpret individual patients' tests in the context of pretest probability,
I think, you know, with our infertility prevention project data, there's been a push to try to target testings towards populations with at least 3% prevalence. And, you know, part of that motivation is more around the cost effectiveness of screening, but also you really do want to look for the disease in populations where it is. And I haven't looked closely at the sensitivity and specificity of the, you know, most recent NATs, so I'm not sure what the positive predicted value is of them in terms of prevalence. And I don't know if others here have and thought about that in more detail.
It's interesting, given that I think it's a really interesting point, especially given that we have routine screening coverage.
Right.
Or, I mean, not coverage, but recommendations.
Right. Right. And what we're seeing in our NHANES data is that it really, prevalence is very low in some populations. Again, with the caveat that, you know, those data, the estimates are very unstable and it's hard to, you know, we don't want to overextrapolate, but there are some populations that prevalence is 1% or less.
Any other questions? All right, if not,
thank you.